Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I had to give that a moment of silence. Let's take a moment of silence right now, folks. We're going to take a moment of silence right now because we really, really want God to bless America. And America is beautiful and wonderful. 30 seconds. And there you have it, folks. God bless America, and God bless each and every one of you for being on here today. Let me give you some of the highlights of the news that just came out. Judge in Maryland rules that parents cannot opt students out of LGBTQ curriculum. A federal judge has ruled against a group of parents, including an Islamic religious group, saying that they have no fundamental right to opt their elementary school-age children out of reading books in class with LGBTQ+ characters. Last year, Montgomery County Public Schools in Maryland incorporated the books into its English language arts curriculum. Supporters claim the books promote a diverse and inclusive environment for all students. Initially, parents could choose to opt their children out of reading and learning about the material. In March, however, the school board instituted a new policy stripping parents of that right. Under the revised policy, schools no longer were required to provide parents with advance notice of when their children would be reading the books. So you're not allowed to opt them out, but you're not even allowed to know what they're teaching your children. Now, let me explain this. We respect people's rights to do and live their life the way that they want to live. However, we're talking about elementary school age, the age of sixth grade down. These kids and their parents, more importantly, are told, sit down, shut up, and do what we tell you. There are some religious advocacy groups. So I'll tell you what they've done. They've united a Christian and American Islamic relations organization. Now, I wonder what they're going to say to the Muslims whenever they start to fight back and push back on this. How is the left going to handle that? I'm just curious. But, you know, you can go all the way back to 2014 when the gay marriage ban was lifted and our Attorney General of West Virginia, Patrick Morrissey, the so-called conservative, all-American, although he's never served a minute outside of himself, this all-American patriot supporting family values, it was his decision to not oppose the ban solely and wholly in 2014 that paved the way for gay marriage. Okay, great. But since 2014, you've seen this continual to spiral into what you have now. You can be gay. God bless you. We pray for you. We don't hate you. We love you. In spite of that, whatever you decide to live your lifestyle, that's not the problem. But now you are trying to indoctrinate our children. And Attorney General Patrick Morrissey, the so-called only conservative right now running for governor, born and raised in New Jersey, by the way, did not move to West Virginia until sometime around 2013 when he couldn't win an election in New Jersey. Mr. Morrissey lives in Charleston, West Virginia, and his wife lives in Alexandria, Virginia. Interesting. But he's credited and proudly wears that title that it was his decision to not oppose the gay marriage ban that opened it up across America. So congratulations, Patrick Morrissey. You have started the spiral, and now we have judges that rule against parents. You're not allowed to take your kids out of the curriculum, but more importantly, we don't have to tell you what we're teaching your children. I wonder how CARE, the group, the Islamic Relations Committee, I wonder how CARE feels about that. They're obviously upset. They're so upset that they're willing to stand beside Christians and Jews and say, hey, we're against that. Why is Joe Biden not labeling them a terrorist religious hate group? Dare you speak out against our policies? How dare you try to tell us that we can't teach your children whatever we want to teach them? How dare you? Patrick Morrissey, you own this. The West Virginia Attorney General running for governor. So all of you jerks out there that think that he's a real good conservative guy, let me tell you, he's not. He owns it all. The only attorney general that was given credit with opening up the dam is none other than Patrick Morrisey, who lives in Charleston, West Virginia. And by the way, his wife lives in Alexandria. We all understand that there is a grooming process. So let me explain something to you about my friends that are gay and lesbians. They're patriots and they're Americans. They live a different lifestyle than I live, okay? But I love them and I respect them because they serve their country, and even they are speaking out against this nonsense. They appreciated the opportunity. They wanted civil unions. That's what they wanted. They wanted to be able to have civil unions so that they could leave something, have wills, be protected, get insurance, and things like that. They weren't looking for full-blown marriages, folks. That's the reason why the lesbian and the gay community is dropping out of this. It's the transgender movement, folks. It's the weird groups that the man-boy love associations. Okay? This is what's going on. The indoctrination of children, the true original gay and lesbian movement, and the friends that I know, and I have several friends. Rich has friends. I'm sure Father Michael has friends, and we love them, and we pray for them. We choose a different lifestyle, but they speak out of this. They say it's evil. They say it's wicked. And it is. Let's just read this again. Attorney General Patrick Morrisey, here again. He wants a lawsuit dismissed. 2017. I want it dismissed. We've done past this in 2014, he says. Let it go. Don't talk about it anymore. And people are afraid to talk about what this guy's doing. But I can tell you this, if he gets elected as governor of the state of West Virginia and moves on with his pathway of destruction, he lobbied for the opioid industry. He brought death in a bottle to West Virginia through his efforts and his wife's efforts in particular. His wife is a registered foreign agent for the Russian company and a Chinese company. And that's who he wanted, the first lady. But she lives in Alexandria anyways, so maybe we'll get a first man. I don't know. Or a first dog or a first, I don't know. How are we going to do that? The problem that I see with these fakes and these phonies that have infiltrated the political system is that's exactly what they are, fakes and phonies, and the people are suckers, straight-up suckers, to continue to vote for these clowns like Patrick Morrisey. The best thing that West Virginia can do is vote for anybody else but him. We have Jim Justice. He's got Baby Dog. Put Baby Dog down, his dog Baby Dog that he carries around. Vote for Baby Dog. If you can't vote for any other candidate, but for the love of God Almighty, if you love Jesus Christ, if you are any kind of a person of faith, you cannot support a person who has done these things that he's done.
I'm not sure I understand.
You're not sure you understand. Well, I will tell you about it once again. A person is only as good as their word. And for the last almost 10 years, this guy cruised in here from New Jersey, and he didn't just affect West Virginia, folks. He set into motion the fall of America with his actions and his refusal to fight this in court. Not to just fight it in court to say, I'm not talking about banning it, banning civil unions or anything like that. I'm talking about he refused to fight anything related to that. Why are the reporters not asking that? See, everything is put into motion. Everything starts with a thought, and the thought moves into a action. And an action sometimes is sinful, moves into what we have now. The gay community wanted civil unions, folks, and we should have gave it to them. Let them have a civil union together. But when you said marriage and you threw in the holy institution of marriage, Patrick Morrissey, and all of the others that supported that, include the Islamic community and the Jewish community and the Christian community, to go against our teachings, to go against our faith, to go against God, and perform something that we know is wrong. Civil union, you would have never got the pushback. But it's grown into this, grown into this. Now judges are ruling. They're empowered by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the circus that's in the White House now, the zoo, the clowns, the jackasses. They have an appropriate animal that represents their party. Jackasses. You ever dealt with a jackass? I mean a real jackass, folks. I'm talking about one that all they do, I'm telling you, they'll kick the snot out of you, okay? They'll bite you, okay? Now, they'll work hard, but guess what? Maybe they need to change it to a sloth, because I don't see too many hard workers on the left, folks. Maybe it needs to be a sloth. Maybe that needs to be their new animal symbol. Same thing with the GOP. What has happened to you? What's happened to you? The grand old party. The elephant. The one that comes in, the almighty powerful. You're cutting deals. You're laying down. So, you know, we got some house cleaning to do, folks. We got some house cleaning to do. But understand this. It all started with the actions of one man who refused to stand up and honor his commitment to the constituents, and why you didn't unelect him. Well, that's why you didn't elect him as U.S. Senator. That's why Joe Manchin beat him like a drum. Beat you like a drum, Patrick Morrissey. I know some of your people are listening to me right now. Patrick Morrissey, I asked him a question on social media on Facebook. I said, I want to ask you, is this true? Because he was on there boasting and bragging. And he says, I'm here to answer any questions. Patrick Morrissey, did you do this in 2014? I said, I couldn't get a response and I couldn't open up his Facebook page. He blocked me. He blocked me. I took a picture of it. I took a picture of the question. There was no cursing. There was no foul. It was just like, did you do this? He run from that. You don't run from things unless you're hiding something. You see, I don't run from things. If you want to talk to me and ask me a question in a civil tone, I will talk to you all day long. But now we have judges in Maryland, which your buddy, Alex Mooney's from Maryland. That's another big liberal state. And I hate it for you Marylanders out there that are not liberal. God bless you. I've met some of you at the GOP presidential debate. Yeah, I was there, baby, in Milwaukee. And we had a great veterans rally before. We packed the house, man. We packed the house. Veterans from every state, and they're standing up. Florida packed. Ron DeSantis, I'm not going to say anything. We're going to go into the debate in a little bit. I promised this thunder to somebody else. But let me tell you, the veterans' voice is rising louder and stronger every day. And I'm putting out a call to all of you that have ever wore a pair of combat boots in your life. For the love of God and country, step up, open your mouth, and start stepping into the ring. We need fighters. We need fighters. We need people that are going to do the right thing. Okay. The debate. August 25th, 2023, tonight on Continue Mission, we're talking about the fight for the soul of America, the soul of America. And we're also going to talk a little bit about our good friends up in north in Canada again, who are fighting for their liberty and independence right now. So we know about the Alberta 51st movement, right? We ain't letting that ball go. Now, that's something else Patrick Morrissey pushed against, you know, because I personally sent a message to his office asking for his stance if elected governor. Do you think I got a response? Do you think Vets for Vet Leadership or the National Defense PAC or the Green Beret PAC or the Green Beret Association or any of these other folks that I hang around with got an answer from that office? Nope. Don't ask about anything related to gay things, about anything related to liberty things, or anything related to abortion things, because his wife is a lobbyist. His company that his wife owns, is part ownership in, is a lobbyist for Planned Parenthood and Gabby Gifford. They are the most anti-Second Amendment, pro-abortion group out there. And that's who West Virginia, and that's who Friends of Coal and some others that are endorsing this clown want to put in the seat running. Have you lost your freaking mind? The man that took $10 million from Club for Growth, the most anti-Donald Trump group in America, the ones that are partly responsible for Donald Trump having his mugshot in Atlanta like a common criminal? Have you lost your freaking mind, voters? Go on and elect that clown and see what happens. I hope you get everything that you have coming to you if you pull a lever and vote for a jerk like that. And you know what? Morrissey and all your listeners out there, if you're listening to me, you know my number, 304-206-6065. Pick up the damn phone and call me sometime. But don't ban people on your political Facebook page or social media, which says you're not supposed to ban people. You are a politician, buddy. And you better get a little more backbone and put a little more starch in your underwear, because you ain't seen nothing yet. You ain't seen nothing yet. We ain't even got to the tough questions. We ain't even starting to talk to you about some of these ties that you all have with that Russian company or the company that was in China during COVID. But don't worry, it's coming. All right, folks, welcome to another episode of Continue Mission. I'm your host, James McCormick, and I am on fire because veterans and Americans and patriots all around the country are coming together, and we got to get behind these warriors so we can stop un-American ideology. It's Marxism, folks. It's destroying our U.S. Constitution. The judges are now telling you that you don't have a right to know what we're teaching your children. We will feed them what we want to feed them, much like Hitler did, much like Mussolini did, much like Stalin did. You didn't have a choice. Your children were indoctrinated, and they were taught to hate the old way, and they came in, and they ratted their parents out, and they sent many of their parents away to concentration camps because they felt that they weren't loyal enough to their party or their dictator or their leader. We've got to get away from this, folks. Hard, hard talk tonight on Continue Mission. It looks like, I think Rich dropped. Sometimes Rich drops, but he'll call back in. That happens sometimes. I don't know what it is. But anyways, I want to also ask you to check out some of our friends at AMFSfiltration.com. That's AMFSfiltration.com, okay? And I want to also talk to you about a couple of other sites that we have on here. And we have NationalDefensePAC.com, GreenBeretPAC.com, NationalDefensePAC.com, VetsForVetLeadership.org. And we also want to look at you to look at these two patriots all American patriots that love God and country, and they have served their country in combat. They have served their country in the most despicable places in the world, and that is Ron DeSantis and Mike Warner, and you can find information at rondesantis.com and mikewarner.com. And then, of course, we always ask you to keep Donald Trump in your prayers. What's been happening to him and his family? They're showing you. Imagine if they can do that to the former president of the United States. What will they do to you? What will they do to you? So here we are for another episode of Continue Mission, and we are going to bring our good friend Greg Meekin on here and Father Michael Pacella. And when Rich Kilblaine can get back on the line, then we'll take him back on the line as well. So how's it going, gentlemen? I know I was pretty hard. I was pretty hard, but it's just the truth.
James, you're on fire tonight.
That
go ahead,
you're speaking to powers. And that's a prophetic voice. You're not having an axe to grind. You're speaking the truth in love. And, you know, what you said earlier about the keeping secrets that the schools are trying to do to the parents, isn't that the tactics of predators? Don't tell anybody. And here they're mirroring the same thing. It's a disgrace.
It's a disgrace. Yeah, I'm on fire a little bit, but here's the thing about that. So, and people get mad when you call them out, but they demonstrate a pedophile demeanor, an attitude. That is a pedophile demeanor and attitude. That is exactly what you said, a predatory action to tell younger kids not to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
To keep their parents in the dark, what are they giving them? Are they giving them an extra 10 minutes for the recess? Or are they giving them a lollipop? I mean, that's what pedophiles do. And you know, we had a group of guys. There was an election cycle where there was a gentleman that was reaching out to the kids of some of these people running for office. They actually got onto one of my kids' children YouTube channels. And you know what? I found that out. And they were trying to, you know, talk to them about political stuff. I mean, you know, they were just kids. There's a child-only YouTube place where kids go in there and they make they were doing a school project. They were making a video. And here's all of this nonsense on there. And boy, I called him out, and other people called him out as well and said, you know, you're acting like a pedophile. And they are still tore up about that. You know, it wasn't an accusation that you are a pedophile. It's you are demonstrating
the same tactics.
The same tactics. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're back on the air. So let's open up the conversation here. We're going to start and talking a little bit about the debate.
Mm-hmm.
You were going to ask us who won.
Can I give my little spiel?
I saved that thunder just for you, Father Michael.
All right. I said he's Italian, was in the Navy, went to Yale and Harvard, and it's not me.
He did really well. He raised over $1 million following 24 hours. He raised $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the veterans are, you know, obviously everybody's upset about what's happening to Donald Trump. And, for sure, I believe this with all my heart. I believe that a Ron DeSantis president would address the nastiness that's been happening to the former president. I really believe that.
But also the border, James, things that you have said in the past, he really qualified very specifically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so when he was as a Navy JAG officer, you know, his primary role was with the United States Navy SEALs. So they prosecuted some of the real bad terrorists.
He was in quite a while.
He was active and inactive.
Yeah.
He was in quite a while and he, mm-hmm. you know, he was over there in 04, 05, 07. He was over there, for a stint, mm-hmm. but the thing is that he realizes what happens when you don't vet people that are coming into your country. Because, you know, if you remember in Iraq, we were fighting people that were slipping in across the border from, you know, Syria and Iran, and these foreign fighters, they were just vicious, you know, and there was, you know, how do we know that's not happening right now? We don't, you know, let's just not even pretend. I'm not even, you know, I respect the office of the President of the United States, but the guy that's in there now is woefully, woefully underqualified, and I don't think that he's mentally or physically fit to hold that position anymore. I really, but I'm scared to death of his vice president taking over, because I think it'd be worse. I mean, who would she appoint as her vice? Ilhan Omar, probably, you know, or pull the whole squad in there. I don't know, you know. How does that work, Rich, if the vice president comes in? Who becomes her vice president?
The Speaker of the House.
Oh, boy, okay. Then we'll have a Republican in there, right?
Yeah,
that would be McCarthy.
Yeah, he's next in line to be the president if the president steps down.
Wow.
Steps down or whatever.
That'd be fireworks, James. Can you imagine?
What do you think about that, Greg? What would you say to that kind of a president, vice president role there?
Well, it's odd, but it's so funny. No one's ever considered the concept of dueling parties, Republican, Democrat being a pres VP, but it's happened in the past. Go ahead, Rich, on that. With RFK coming to the forefront a little bit, and say what you will, RFK, I disagree with 90% of his policies, but just a guy who's at least bringing it from a courage standpoint and taking on the swamp, you know, head on, and I'm saying, well, could anyone ever consider an RFK or someone else, a Republican president, and maybe a really good Democrat vice president? Other combinations.
Well,
it's never been considered before, but remember the read a great book, A Team of Rivals, that talked about that, right? Remember, was it Lincoln? He brought on all his competitors to be on his cabinet. And in the old days, we could have done that. In the old days, we could have done that. I don't think, as a good old dual citizen here, again, James, I don't see that out of the ordinary at all. It would be tough. It would have to be a really good combination. But I'll tell you what, a Kamala Harris presidency, I'm going to have nightmares. I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight, James, if you bringing that up, dude. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
She'll laugh.
They're making
her
the czar of AI now. Did you hear that? Or whatever.
No.
They put the board up. Dude, what a ridiculous performance as a public service as a vice president. So there you go. You got my vote against Harris for the next president. How about that?
Yeah, definitely. Rich, you were going to say something?
Well, RFK Jr. is out. I don't know if you guys heard, but the chairman of the DNC has already announced that Biden is the nominee. There's no voting. For the last three presidential elections, the Democrat, the DNC has essentially stacked the deck. And see, at least with the GOP, you get the vote. That's how Trump slipped through there. But with the Democratic Party, I mean, he just came out and announced Biden's the nominee. There's no contest. We're not even close to an election. So if you're wanting to look at something that is similar to the communist parties in Russia, Vietnam, China, where the party rules. It's the DNC.
Yeah.
Hey, Riz, you want to throw a wrench in everybody's... you talk about DeSantis. I love DeSantis, by the way, James. I've looked into him for a while. I love this guy. He's best. I can't believe the resume on this guy. But you want to throw a wrench in their plans. Probably, I'm guessing it was maybe a month or two ago, I was on the air in Edmonton with my friend, Pastor Mike Phillip, and we talked about this. And I said, you know, especially looking at the debate last night, there's so much money being spent and stuff. I wish... If I had my druthers, right now this minute, the RNC would declare Trump the candidate, because we can play that game, and Trump cheerfully brings on Ron DeSantis as his VP. It's declared, no worries. Maybe we have a little rubber stamp vote at the convention, but we can play that game and then take all the money. And maybe all the talent. I mean, we like Vivek. We're seeing some real cool things. Maybe start talking about them as cabinet members right now. And just we'll play that game and take on Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. May the best man win. May the one man who's able to walk and talk a full sentence win, maybe. But let's do that. Let's play that game. Save all the money that the Republicans would pay beating each other up, which they're going to be. And throw every dollar against beating Joe Biden or Kamala or whoever they want to roll up.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so, go ahead, Rich.
DeSantis isn't doing as well as you guys think he is. All right, he's made some outlandish decisions. I mean, going to war with Disneyland. Disney was not a good idea. I mean, yeah, you know, he's attacking the wokeness, but. He seemed to be grandstanding, and he just picked some of the wrong fights. And I've got some friends in Florida who said he's really not that good. I mean, it's almost like he was running for president there. My opinion of DeSantis in the debate does not match with what you guys are. He didn't win. He held his ground. That's all he did. Okay, let's find out if he inched up in the polls. Okay. The fact that he is the front runner on that stage does make him a winner. All right. But, you know, I think all he did was held his own. Right. It's the other, you know, when you look at winners, I'm looking at people who actually gain ground. A Trump DeSantis ticket might be too scary because they're too much alike. I think a Trump Haley ticket would be much more palatable because I think we're now at the stage.
But she did horrible. No,
she did. She did very well.
Oh,
she
yeah.
Tell me why she did horribly.
Hey, Rich, Haley, say what anyone will about Nikki. She's got the ambassador experience. She's punched the Arabs right in the nose over there.
She's got the executive experience because she was a governor.
Yep.
And she's got the foreign policy experience because she was an ambassador. Yes. I mean, she nails it. And I think she did. I mean, keep in mind, as low as she was in the polls, I think she's going to gain ground. Okay. But when you're looking at the ticket, your vice president has to reach out and grab the people you don't. Trump picked Pence because Trump is not Cyrus. He's Cyrus, anointed by God. He's not a godly man, but he's going Cyrus let the Jews return to their homeland. Cyrus was not a godly man, but he was anointed. The thing was, Trump picked Pence because of his strong convictions and his religious beliefs. And I'll tell you right now, Pence lost. He preached too much. You know, and I had this discussion with a couple people, and they basically said, you know what? He'd probably do a lot better in a tent revival than he did that night. Okay. you know, but
do you think
he
tried
was brought
to represent
in by Trump
the administration?
Go ahead. What?
Do you think he tried to represent the Trump administration in an apologetic way?
Nope. I think he was proud of. I mean, he, you know, when you listen, I've listened to his speeches and stuff like that. The only thing he criticizes Trump on is the pressure to overturn the election. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Other than that, he is very proud of, as he said, the Trump-Pence administration because of what they do. He wants to take as much credit for the accomplishments that that administration had during, I mean, during the tenure.
Let me give you some of the polling. So you go and you look at the polling, and it's all very consistent. You know, obviously Trump remained, you know, very strong, even though he didn't hit the debate. But it says here, voters may be more open to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis after his performance at the first Republican debate earlier this week, according to a new poll. In the poll, DeSantis still trails President Trump, though with 13% support from Republicans. So basically, he gained 13%. And then if you go down
He was, what was he before?
He's always
been in that. What I'm saying is, all right, what was his polling before the debate? He didn't gain 13%. He's always been there.
Well, let me read to you what it says so that way I can.
Okay.
All right.
And what's the source for that? Wait. Whenever anybody reads me anything, an article, what is the source of that?
Okay,
New York Times, Wall Street Journal, what is it?
The Hill. It's the Hill.
Okay. All right.
So it's the Hill, and the Hill elections coverage, you can find that as well.
Okay.
All right. So it says a Washington Post and a 538 poll of potential Republican voters who watched the first GOP debate found that DeSantis and entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy performed best with 29 and 26% of the respondents giving them that label.
Oh, yeah. All right. I think I read that one. Okay.
Now,
let me tell you,
let me get the Trump numbers here real quick. The poll also found the share of respondents who say they're considering casting their ballots for Trump dropped from 66 to 61%, while DeSantis went up from 62 to 67% on that front. So he gained ground with potential Trump voters.
Wait. There's only 100%. There's 100%. So both candidates can't be above 50%.
No, here's what I'm telling. It's Ron DeSantis went up from 62 to 67%.
62% of the popular vote?
No. 62% of the respondents, okay, had originally had said that they were going to vote for Ron DeSantis. I'm going to read the survey. 347 Republicans and had a credibility interval of plus or minus 6.4 percentage points. So that's what you're getting there. Now, so basically where you would go in and normally 66% of the people that were asked, would you vote for Trump? Only 61% are saying that, whereas you would go and you would ask the DeSantis voters or the potential voters who would normally say 62% would say that they had vote for DeSantis. That went up to 67%. So Trump lost.
Okay. I think I understand it now. Okay. So it isn't like, are you going to vote? Would you vote for Trump? Would you vote? You have to choose between the two. No, you're
yes.
Would you vote for
yes.
Trump? Would you vote for DeSantis? Okay, that's the question that was asked.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would make sense. All right, so he gains a little bit, but let's look in the major polls. All right, but here's the thing.
Is a major poll. Yeah, it is one of the major polls.
Yeah, but they all fluctuate. after the debate, I started listening to all sides of it, and people were all over the place. I just tell you that people were all over the place. You know, there were some that they felt that DeSantis gained ground. I didn't. I think he, and I would say the majority of them that I listened to matched with my opinion is he held ground. You know, it may fluctuate a little bit, but he held ground. Okay.
Yeah.
Ramaswamy go ahead.
I just said he didn't lose ground, correct?
That's right. No, absolutely. He didn't lose anything. I don't think he gained a lot. I mean, he had some good sound bites and stuff, and yeah, Ramaswamy is the one I'm going to say that gained ground. Okay, now he hasn't won me over because he has no experience. He's promising stuff that he can't deliver. A president can't fix the problems he said he could fix. Can't do it. Okay, that shows. And the others ganged up on him on that, especially Christie. And I'm going like, yeah, really, he doesn't know what he's talking about. But we got
he's
a
excited,
good look at it.
Enthusiastic.
And the fact that everybody ganged up on him gave him a lot of time to talk. So if anything, if you didn't know who, you know, Ramaswamy was before the debate, you now know who he is. And so people are going to look at him. So he may inch up a little bit on the polls. Actually, he was in the number – I think he was in the number three slot. Okay. Hmm.
Yeah, Rich,
yeah,
I think
that's what he said. And he said he went up one, according to what I saw. He claims –
What was that?
He's now in second place.
Rich, what I loved about Ramaswamy is I feel – how about this? I mean, he's clearly the most dynamic person, I mean, period. You know, he was kind of the Trump in the room, if you will. But it reminded me a little bit. It might have been, because I think he's extremely dynamic. And of course, 100% loyal to Trump, which gets him automatically into the fold.
Actually, yeah, you're right.
You know, but what I saw
some commentators basically said everything he said is what Trump was saying.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. Vivek, it almost seemed to me like it was the Republicans' moment. Get this, Rich and James, and Father. It was Obama's speech, the DNC in 2004. It was their moment.
Skinny guy with a funny name. Yeah.
You know, but
I thought he said a lot
just in
of
terms
hubris.
Of dynamic. I was just really impressed, and I think he's here to stay.
I thought it was a lot of fluff and not real substance. As Rich said, he really went outside of his sphere of competence. I thought he showed disrespect for Mike Pence. You know, then he later called him Mr. Vice President. I mean, he's a young guy, and I just thought that he was a little bit of a showman, but he had a lot of image and not a lot of substance, in my estimation.
Yeah. Ramaswamy actually dropped from 11 to let me pull this poll up. So I'm looking at this other poll that says Ramaswamy dropping from 10% support to 7%, and Mike Pence staying at 2. Nikki Haley did see an increase from 3 to 11%. Tim Scott went from 8 to 7. You know, Chris Christie dropped from 3 to 1. You know, and then I'm going to go down here. The Ron DeSantis numbers are really good here, folks. The public opinion strategy poll found DeSantis closing the gap against Trump in a head-to-head matchup, with DeSantis having 40% to Trump's 43%. That's a neck-and-neck race, guys.
That's hard to believe because he's been polling in the teens, okay? So how did he jump from the teens to 41%? But I will tell you this. You want to look at, all right, the polls differ. But I will tell you this. When it comes to raising money, there were two people on that stage that after their performance began to rake in the money. And who were they?
Right. DeSantis and Vivek.
Ramaswamy. Ramaswamy. Yeah. So you can tell me that polls says, hey, he dropped in the polls. People were pouring money into his campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a conflict here.
Well, I don't think that they poured the money in like they poured to Ron DeSantis. I think DeSantis is the one.
Well, Ron DeSantis is already the leader, so he's got a bigger war chest.
I heard a million
bucks. Okay.
I heard $1 million off the debate with DeSantis. I don't know
if that's
the right number. Then 450. I think Vivek got like 450. The good news is, guys, seriously. We always find during the primaries, and it's the same way on the other side, whenever they had competition in the primaries on the Democrat side, but we tend to micromanage our candidates no matter what. Because I'll tell you what, I've just been taking a step back and saying, I don't know anyone who would be supporting anyone on that stage last night. I don't know one person who would be voting for Joe Biden. Okay, because I believe my theory is there's 75 million people right now, they're Republicans. The United States of America, that would vote for any Republican, including any Republican on that stage, maybe other than Asa Hutchinson, whatever, right? but would vote for any over Joe Biden. That's the brass ring, folks. That's the brass ring while we're beating each other up.
This is the way I've always explained it. Okay. Republicans and Democrats. Well, the Republicans elect their candidate. The DNC picks their candidate, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's the swing voters who decide who will run the country. That's who you've got to pay attention to. Because if you look at, I mean, you watch Biden now. The man's feeble. Watch the way he walks. He gets lost on a stage and has to be shown the way off, okay? They ask him questions like, hey, how do you feel about the fire in Miami? I mean, in Maui, and he can't, no comment. And you're supposed to be the empathetic president? You know, the mm-hmm. guy's gone senile, but he still has that loyal 41% following. Look, both parties, let's see, the Democratic Party, seriously, we have got, you know, a brain-dead senator and another one who is Feinstein. Where they literally have to tell it, no, you got to change your vote. I mean, literally, right now, they'll vote for anybody who will toe the party line. You know, just got to be a warm body and vote the way the party tells you to vote. And we don't care about leadership anymore, okay? But it's the swing voters that care. The swing voters. That's who's going to decide who the president is. What I looked at on the stage up there was not candidates running for president, but running for vice president.
Hmm.
Well, that was the line of the whole debate was when Trump said, hey, this debate's all about who's going to be my vice president. That's the line of the year right there.
I didn't hear that, but that's the way I interpreted it, okay?
Oh, yeah. That's great. Isn't that Trump? Like, what happened? You know, everybody's got such a – since 2015, since the elevator ride, we've all seen it. They've just had an obsession with Trump long before, you know, the term TDS, which is the Trump derangement syndrome. I just came to my heart here. I wrote a piece called TDS, Trump Denier Syndrome. About a year before that. I like the word denier better, but what the obsession, and I call it personal, repressed personal jealousy or politically immature envy. And I just say, for whatever reason. But in the end, all this guy does is win. And it drives him crazy. Can you imagine if it was the other way around with this kind of nonsense we're seeing with this Biden administration and the family? Can you imagine it was a Trump family?
Did any of you see his interview with Tucker?
Yes,
he
I did.
Did that instead of going.
Yep.
What was your opinion? I did too. What did you think?
of that interview itself. I think everything's always kind of typical Trump. You know, he talks as much.
I thought he was kind of domesticated a little bit. I thought he was kind of really
domesticated.
Civil.
Domesticated.
Yeah, I thought
I
he was rather
it.
Civil and not reactionary and bitter or resentful. I found it very interesting.
I agree with that, Father. I agree with that. And by the, you know, no matter what, even if it's by default, we do get more mature every year. And no matter what, and no matter what anyone can say anything they want about Trump, I'm a results guy. He got results. I just say to my Democrat friends, I've got some hardcore Democrat friends, and especially Canadians back east, it's like, I want to keep this simple, everybody. I just want my $1.75 Trump gas back. That's all. Can you guys get that for me? It's $5 up in Seattle now.
And you get that gas price back down like that, everything that is delivered by trucks will go down in price too.
Absolutely. We're paying this is devastation. People don't know it. You know, guys like you do. The devastation with just the gas prices. And now we're not talking grocery prices. We're not talking everything else, but just the gas prices. A devastated industry with the trucking industry. Hello, and prices? Are you kidding?
Yeah. We talked to a businessman today. My bishop visited a couple days, and this is a man who's a very astute business person. And he ran down all that has happened economically. It was amazing. There were some things that I wasn't aware of. And just even the hardship that it's caused for business people to even make a profit. And the thing that bothers me is that it seems like the voting public is low information, and I disagree with what Mike Pence said. He said that the government has to be as good as our people. I'm just being honest, and I'm a sinner, and Paul said he was the chief of sinners, but I just don't think our people, I think they're gullible. I don't think there's a lot of common sense. I don't think common sense is that common. And it concerns me because I still think there's going to be a lot of people, irrespective of what's happening to us, who are still going to vote for Biden or the Democrats.
If you ever want to really stump a Democrat,
41%. There's a
really
loyal 41% that will always vote for the Republicans, and there's a loyal 41% that will vote. Actually, I think it was a really like 43%, but Biden's losing some of the Democrats. Okay. He's even dropped below 40%. Okay.
You ever want to stump a Democrat? You know, while we were talking on this, as far as Trump accomplishments, and while we're on this conversation, you know, my favorite question to Democrats are true hardcore Trump haters. And again, the 41%, Rich, you know, my favorite question is, okay, say what you will of Trump's 4-year term, of the scores and scores of quantifiable accomplishments and historical milestones. Which two or three do you like the most? That's my favorite question. I've had Democrats say zero. Oh, okay, that's fine, zero. I loved my energy independence because ever since I was in grade school, we were taught to recycle and blah, blah. I loved energy independence.
How do you argue
I love
with that?
That?
I mean,
I love
how
do you, my
dollar 75. That's not propaganda. That was a fact. How do you argue with that?
And it's ridiculous.
Called deception.
You know, I love my, it was great. I love my record household
that
income.
Biden,
oh,
but,
boy,
I mean,
I'm sorry.
You're deceived in believing that Bidenomics is working because he says so. And yet if you listen to some of the interviews of the people on the street, and we all know we have felt the pain, electric bill, gasoline, as we said, groceries, I mean – but yet people believe it because it's said in repetition over and over and over again.
Wait.
Like you said, there's no result.
Who believes it? No. Biden is tank. When it comes to the economy, Biden's approval rating is like, what, 33%?
Yeah, pretty
you know,
low.
And you're going like, what 33% thinks Bidenomics is good? You know,
you remember Baghdad Bob? Baghdad Bob,
yeah.
You guys remember that? We used to laugh at that 30 yes. years ago.
Yeah.
But that's what they're doing. They're going to the press saying we're not seeing what we're seeing. It's not a good economy.
How can you sit there and go buy groceries, pay your bills, go pump gas into your car, and believe this economy is better? Nobody has the spending power they used to have.
Yeah. Let me just tell you, give you a little example of that. I was driving back from Milwaukee, and I had to stop in Gary, Indiana. I just thought, you know, of all the places to stop. So I stopped in Gary, Indiana to get gas. The truck took $96 to fill the truck up, $96. Now, normally, when gas prices were even at $3 a gallon, I could get away with $68 to $69 to fill up that Ford F-150. Now, I have friends on the left that say, well, you should get a hybrid or you should get something else. You know what I mean? But it's like I can't carry my stuff and do the things that I need to do in a freaking cracker box for a car. So it's like, it's unbelievable. But yeah, you're right. It's terrible. And it's the worst I have ever seen it. Ever.
How have you guys felt about the increase in electric and things of that nature? Just the regular household expenses. Have you seen a big difference in it impacting your overall budget?
Yeah. Aerosol's turning the damn temperature up in my house. I'm cooking when I go upstairs, all right?
I'm hearing my buddy up in Canada.
We used to like keep it like maybe 67, 68. So I'm like, no, you keep the temperature at 75.
Mine's on 74. Doreen just had me put it up.
Oh, okay. Well, I've got to come over to your house.
Hey, listen, I'm going to tell you something. I can't live like that. My, you know, Heather tries to turn it up to 70, you know, 374. Nope. I crank it down to 68 or 70. And, you know, I'm just not going to live like that. You know what I mean? But the bills.
All right, so you're paying more then. So the rest of
us
have had to turn up the heat in our house, the temperature in our house, to try to keep our bills down.
Yeah.
Your bills are going up. All right.
Well,
I got
look,
the fan
I'm,
on
I'm
up
supporting.
Here.
Yeah. I'm supporting coal miners who are mining that coal to create that energy. That's who I'm supporting is the coal miners. And I tell Heather that. I'm like, look, I said, every time we do that, you know, it's job security. Yeah, and sometimes it's natural gas as well. But, you know, look, the bottom line is that I'm not going to live like that. Now, eventually we'll have to because, you know, this administration that we're in and the way that they're carrying on, I think that they're going to get us to a point to where, you know, we're going to have to take some serious actions. And I mean serious actions. We're either going to have to unelect them or you're going to see a revolution in this country. I didn't think it, but I feel it's coming. And I got people out there talking about a revolution, and I put it on a Facebook page earlier. And basically it says, you know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, going to war, you know, but realistically they struggle and they get upset when their electric is off for a few hours and they can't get cell phone service.
Right.
I'm going to tell you, you're going to be months and months without any of that, and you're going to be under fire, you know. So I hope that the voters make the right decision and more secretaries of state are doing what my secretary of state is doing. You know, he took over 400,000 dead and illegitimate voters off of the list in West Virginia, a state that has 1.68 million people. 400,000 voters potential fraudulent voters. There ain't no potential. They showed where some of them voted, and some of them have been dead since 2006. Come on, man.
Actually,
go to prison.
Actually, a friend of mine, my mentor, he said that his mother has consistently voted Republican all the way up until she died. And since she's died, she's been voting Democrat.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Hey, listen, I got to introduce Val Olson. She just called in. Val, I'm glad you got the number. God love you. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for having me back on the show. It's great to be here, James.
Let me tell you something. You and Greg have an open seat on this show anytime you want to come on. Open seat. You come on and we will find something really cool to talk about, because everybody on here right now is a no joke real patriot. And I like to hang out with people like all of you, even Rich. Rich.
Well, right back at you, gentlemen. Thank you.
Yeah. I tease a lot with Rich, but let me tell you, Rich and I have known each other almost 20 years. I love the guy, and he knows it. He came to my wedding, you know. I mean, he's always been around and always been a good friend, and we're going to go metal detecting again. As soon as it cools down, Rich, I'm coming, and we're going to go hit that again, man. So, anyways, so back to the debate. Val, what did you see in the debate, and what did you think went well and didn't go so well?
You know, my focus, I'm going to be honest, was what was going on the back end. I was watching, paying attention to Tucker and Trump. I didn't see that coming. I didn't know that was going to happen. So that was where my attention was. How about you guys?
I watched both, Val. I watched both, not at the same time, obviously. But I just felt like it was important to have all the information and then the commentary, and to really think deeply, you know, if it just was showmanship or if there was some substance. And Rich and I had a pretty good conversation today. I think his assessment was very good. And I watched it with my wife, who's very politically astute. And I was surprised on how tempered Trump sounded. Very civil, didn't have that edge, very lucid, non-judgmental. And, you know, Greg said something about maturity. I think it's more than that. He was really harnessed. I think he was deliberate, calculated, and it was impressive. It was almost like a different person to me. I don't know if you saw what I saw or what I thought I saw.
I didn't watch it, but as a pattern, when Trump does a one-on-one interview, he's very calm, okay, and he tries to come off as more dignified, okay, and when you then listen to the liberal media, who pulls things out of context and goes, he said this and he said that, I'm like, yeah, he said it, but if you listen to the context of the conversation, it's not the way you're interpreting it. But when he's up on the stage in front of a group of people, he's flamboyant. There's two Trumps. There's one who's the Trump at the rallies, and there's the Trump. I mean, you go back to even before he ran for president, and you listen to his interviews. He's very calm and thoughtful.
Good observation. What do you think, Val? What did you feel?
Well, I was one of the 88 million that tuned in, and I was assessing it from an information standpoint, because people are triggered. People get triggered by the tone or delivery of a message, and so that's, you know, media training 101. If we can get past the emotional response to what's being said and focus on just the information. He was very confident. He knew what he was talking about. He knows where he's going. And his track record, we know what we get. And I really appreciate that in a leader. You know, I am so done with these wishy-washy bullshitters. I hope that's okay to say, because that's what's happening is they feed us a line of garbage and we take it. And it is garbage. It doesn't count for anything. They get into power. They don't do what they say. So it becomes garbage. And we have to pay attention to what they're saying, because the information is all there. And we cannot be afraid of the information. And I think that's important. It maybe sounds silly, but we need to hold these people accountable to what they say. And that's where I pay attention to Trump, because his track record is there. He does what he says he's going to do. And that personal accountability is key. And probably the big thing I took from Trump last night was, you know, he was saying he's looking at who's going to be his VP. He's not taking these other guys, I would say, too serious. He's not threatened by them, and he seems to be using whatever's thrown at him. He knows how to kung fu it back at them. So I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Trump has, you know, throughout his business, has been taken to court. He is used to it. In fact, I think he thrives on that. He needs that energy. Here's the thing that has impressed me recently, and this is with the Hunter Biden case, and that is the facts that are being revealed now. Trump brought those up in the debate. They'll show it, like, okay, Hunter Biden received $3.9 million from this oligarch, okay? And Trump mentioned $3.9 million, and Biden denied it. Everything Biden denied in that debate, we are now finding out, is exactly true. Trump knew this. And Trump was impeached the first time for trying to find more dirt, truth, you can say slash truth, on Hunter Biden. Congress is doing right now is exactly what Giuliani was doing over there. What Trump was asking, he wasn't doing anything illegal. He's investing. This guy had some really solid information on the Biden-Hunter scandal, and he was impeached for it. Okay?
Rich,
so we're sitting there going, like, how much else does he know that – I mean, you know, I loved his comment. Like, he understood the system, that politicians were bought because he bought them. He knows how it works.
Question for Rich on that. Clarify. I have heard, because there was just it was as silly as it sounds, a perfect phone call. The Trump thing.
Yeah.
But clarify this for me. My understanding is that we have an ongoing treaty with Ukraine and other countries where we interchange investigative, you know, intel. Blah, blah, like not partnership, but, and Trump was really addressing that, knowing that that cooperation was ongoing between the countries. You know, the U.S. can be used as a resource, Ukraine can be used as a resource as far as intel gathering. And I listened to the phone call, a lot was about that, just, hey, can we cooperate, blah, blah, blah. A lot went on over here in the United States, but totally, I mean, actually professional and based on an ongoing, treaty or arrangement.
Well,
it
doesn't matter whether it is that. It's the fact that hey, I suspect there's something corrupt going on with Hunter Biden, and I would like to know about it. Can you help me out? That's the context of the question.
Sure.
And
sure.
The Democrats impeached him for it, and now we have the Republican, Congress. Asking these questions and finding out there was really some corruption going on here, okay?
Yeah. It will be years and years before all of us know what happened not only during that, but also where this $100 and whatever, $20, $30 billion going to Ukraine is really going to end up. Because we know what's going to happen. So sadly, it's years that we find out that stuff. I just like to know now. You know, when Sheriff Mark Lamb said that, you know, find out.
Yeah. If I am really looking forward to the investigation getting by financial records, that's what I want to see. But I mean, Biden, you know, just like Trump has boasted about the classified documents, which is going to bite him in the butt, Biden boasted about having that
Burisma guy fired, removed.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Now we're finding out.
Oh yeah.
That no, it wasn't because the investigator was corrupt. It was because the people he was investigating were corrupt.
Yep.
Okay. Right. And then there was money exchanged for that, paid off. That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad.
You know that prosecutor,
and
that fired prosecutor.
Out about that, and he got impeached.
Yeah, that fired prosecutor is becoming a whistleblower. You know that?
Yeah, he said.
I mean, he's
corrupt.
Talking. He's
yeah.
talking the bribe word, and that we wouldn't have the Ukraine invasion had Biden not be president. Wouldn't happen under Trump. I mean, there's going to be no matter what. When we get to this level of judicial investigation, win, lose or draw. The cool thing about it, it really is discovery. I mean, you by law, you learn a lot more information, transparency, things like bank statements that you wouldn't know otherwise. So no matter what, I'm kind of bullish about the next year in terms of transparency and what we're going to learn, because there's a lot, everything.
All right, I like that.
But
I think, can I say something a minute about
the historical setting? I've done a lot of investigation. I highly respect him, but we know that there were skeletons in his closet, and I'm talking about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and also JFK, you know, the assassination. Now, we've been waiting about 50 years. So I really don't think, Greg, we're really, really going to necessarily get all of the information revealed in even our lifetime. And it's unfortunate, but it just seems like, you know, conspiracy theorists, different things of that nature have taken so long to be exposed. And I don't have a lot of confidence that we're going to hear too much before too long, and probably not even really all the evidence and all the documentation, even in our lifetimes.
All right. This is my prediction.
Mm-hmm.
We may not get it all, but we're going to get enough.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. So
the
first cases that are going to be tried – is the Georgia case, which is the weakest one, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've watched CNN, and they've had legal experts say this is weak, okay? I mean, it's based on the fact that the premise is Trump knew he lost the election, and he caused this to happen, which he did. Still believes he won the election. He still believes there's fraud in Georgia. So there's no case. And there's one of the co-conspirators, per se, who's so confident he wants his trial now, in October. There's 18 people indicted on this. So let's say that, you know, and the speculation is that the DA is not ready, will not be ready to do this. So you've got 19 cases you've got to try, and Trump will be the last one. How is it going to look when this case falls apart one trial mm-hmm. at a time? And you get to Trump, to do is cite some of the things that is like, let's look at when the Democrats challenged the votes, is what Trump did. Let's look at what the governor did is he believed that there was irregularities in the voting, and he changed things. Why did you change things? He can't admit that the governor can't admit that he changed the voting laws or whatever because he wanted to keep people from voting. He has to say there was irregularities in it. This whole
You're talking about Kemp, right?
I heard that from CNN. the case is going to fall apart. Okay, and then you get the next case. The only case, charges that are being brought against Trump, that, and they, if the Democrats were smart, and I think what they really want to do is get Trump tied down in court and not in rallies, because they know Biden can't campaign. Okay, he won because of COVID and he hid in his basement, but now he's going to have to get out and campaign. All right, the only charges that Trump has got to worry about is the mishandling of classified documents. And when you, I mean, look, you don't take a damn war plan home with you, right? I work on war plans. There are plans, I can't even discuss the country that we were planning military operations in, okay? All right. I mean, he needs to be punished on that, all right? Somehow, but, you know, not taking him out of the election or whatever, but the thing is, all the others, let's look. So what we're going to find is more and more evidence as we get closer to the election next year. We're going to find more and more evidence of Biden's connection with this corruption, the payoffs going directly to Biden, and the cases against Trump are going to be falling apart. These guys are going to get exonerated. So you then tell me how this is going to look. What's the optics on it?
And even Dershowitz has said that even if some of the cases are lost, there'll be one in appeal. And, you know, he thinks they're frivolous. You know, I've listened to a number of different commentaries, you know, with his analysis of the situation.
And I want to add this because I listened to him, too. And he said he's never voted for Trump and never will.
Right,
he's not
right.
a Trump supporter.
Right, absolutely.
He's a constitutional law expert.
I met him at Harvard one time. He had his Yankee cap on. I yelled across the street, "Hey, Al!" But he's been very good, very fair, very balanced and honest. You know, he wrote the book, Getting Trump, and I've appreciated his commentary a great deal.
You know, Father, you bring that up.
Can I weigh in?
Oh, yes. Go ahead, Bell. Yes.
I just wanted to touch on the grassroots. Because the grassroots and public justice, I believe, are really going to impact this. And oftentimes, the grassroots is forgotten about or overlooked, but they come on the 11th hour. And as this goes, the momentum grows. And you don't have to go very far. You don't have to be a political savvy anybody to know that there is corruption. And people are, they want justice. And I think when you can't rely on the traditional means of getting justice, you still have a hunger for it. And so I expect that Trump has no fear. He recognizes that they're going to throw everything they can at him, but he seems to be using it. And that fearless confidence that, I mean, I don't, you can put someone else up to him, throw a name out there, but I can't think of anybody who is displaying a fearlessness to keep going no matter what. It's that, you know, never surrender spirit. And that's what he's showing. And I think the people, the local people, and it doesn't matter where you go, that local factor, it's just growing with momentum. So I just want to touch on the grassroots.
But what do you think about the October surprise, Val? I mean, something like that. Do you think that, not about Trump, but about the other side, do you think that's a possibility that we're going to get a real shocker? I mean, what else more can they say about Trump or do about
Trump?
Wait,
yeah, I was going to say, look, you're trying to put the guy in prison and your case is going to fall apart. What could you possibly bring up as a shocker?
Right.
Okay. However, with Biden, his physical and mental health is declining every day. And he's got a – we're still over a year out from the election. Let's not even talk about the corruption that's going to be revealed. For him, it will be devastating. There, see, the thing is, you know, on the Republican, on Trump's side, you've done the worst you could possibly do to him. And like you said, Val, it's increasing his popularity.
Mm-hmm.
It is adding to, I mean, for the optics of it is that the Democrats are so afraid of him running against Biden that they're trying to do everything, you know, unethical to keep him from running. And when the cases start falling apart, that's just going to reinforce that. And so that's going to win this. You said the locals. I call it the swing voters, those that vote either way. They're, you know, when they look and they see Biden's, you know, stumbling around on a stage, and then they see these cases falling apart, they're going. And like you said, the fact that he is not distracted. Look, we've had candidates who, and I think it was on CNN, and they showed like how candidates self-destructed. I forgot the one guy who made a challenge, like find some dirt on me, and they found out he had an affair in his campaign. I mean, little things in their campaign. We've got big things going up against Trump, and he, and I like the way you described it, where it makes him look strong. You're looking at, this is a guy who can face down any adversary around the world.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yeah. Moral courage, absolutely. But I'm just curious about, you know, this October surprise that always seems to happen. And like I said, nothing else can really be thrown at Trump. But do you think that there'll come out something even other than what we already know about Biden at that time?
No, it's still too early to tell. I think this case that we have is just slowly going to erode away Biden's support from the swing voter.
I'd like to hear. You're right about the October surprise, but I would think. So Val, I think you were getting ready to say something. What's your thoughts? You were getting ready to interject something.
I was going to ask. I want to hear from you guys more about the October surprise. I know I'm late to the ball game here, but fill me in on what you guys mean when you say October surprise.
Yep. Go ahead, Father Michael. Your turn.
In every election, you know, something horrendous has come out, like the last minute, to throw a wrench in the thing. And mm-hmm. I just have to believe, understanding the way people work, that they're planning something that is really going to give you some pause. See, they suppressed Hunter's computer and all. That would have been an October surprise.
That's right.
And so I'm just wondering the strategy, you know, the stratagem of what's going to come out. What else can they throw at President Trump that they haven't already, even about affairs and finances and Russia? But I'm just wondering if we're not going to get, you know, stunned with something that they're conjuring up right now, even though it's more than a year away.
All right, let me ask you this. Is there anything anybody could tell you about Trump that would shock you by this point?
No.
Then there's not going to be an October surprise on Trump.
Right. Okay?
I agree with that, Rich. Don't forget the Democrats here, okay? Everybody, the Democrats, they got so many skeletons piling up here. Father was right. Father Mike was right that there was an October surprise with the Hunter Biden laptop that was actively covered up by the FBI and the media and social media. And what we don't really – people forget. In the United States of America, you're not allowed just to make up charges and bogus charges and Al Capone frame jobs. You're not allowed to do that. And they're doing it now right in front of our eyes. I think you know, when you look at an October surprise, I think it's going to come down on the Democrats. There's so much, so much waves of transparency coming here. But either way, Trump was the guy. He's the only guy, I believe, on the planet, on the Republican side that could have survived this and is going to survive anything else. And what's funny, no one knows what's going to happen. We don't, no one knows what's going to happen after today, guys. Come on. It's a crazy world. And, but one thing about Trump, he even keeps a little sense of humor and a cockiness about him. The best second line of the year was when he said, I'm just one one charge away from the nomination, right? One indictment away from the nomination. I'm thinking that let's get a little color in sports and politics and stuff rather than canceling people for everything they say. So either way, he's the only guy who's got the panache to do it. He's the only guy that I see. So I'm sitting saying, could I micromanage and maybe I like DeSantis and I really like Vivek and I think Nikki's great. I think Chris Christie needs to retire. I don't know why Ada Hutchinson was on the stage, dude. You look like a corpse standing up there. But I think the Democrats got their hands full this time, guys. I really do. And we'll see. We'll see. But either way, I said this on a two-hour show earlier today, no matter what, I think we all believe this, that in November 2024 is a tipping point. It's a fork in the road. It's one way or another. We've said that in past elections, but nothing like this, nothing. You know, that Hillary Clinton.
Brad, can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
I have a very good friend that leans liberal, and he has some real ties in the news industry. And I proposed to him the possibility of Michelle Obama stepping up. And, you know, we've already talked about Newsom and things of that nature. When I talk about an October surprise, do you think anything like that is a possibility?
Well, I'll tell you what. You must have ESP, Father, because I'll tell you what.
I have the Holy Spirit.
a number of years ago, guys. And I'm famous for my Greg's List, where I just predict stuff. I guaranteed a Trump White House in 2015. And I wrote a piece. It was a Greg's List. I think it was like 18 reasons why Michelle Obama is not only electable, I think it was for the VP position at the time. She's the only one I'd be afraid of from a competition standpoint if they played their hands right. And I'm going to actually look back on that piece. It was like 18 reasons why Michelle Obama will be vice president, something like that. And the piece was not it was not guaranteeing that would happen, but saying, boy, if the Democrats want to win, that's what they could do. There's an untouchable candidate right there.
Could you send us a copy or send it to James that he can send
it to us? I'd be happy to. It's online. I will send that. And I'm interested to look back as well because I missed on that one. Technically, it wasn't a hard prediction, but I said this is the only Democrat I'd be afraid of as a competitor because she'd be really tough to beat.
Said no way. And friend's African-American who said no way she would run. And he's really astute in these things. But
I agree with
you. That would be a surprise that could really throw a wrench.
It's a game changer. And you're right, Father. He's right. I don't think they would. I mean, believe it or not, Obama, again, I called it a BOGO, buy one, get one free, you know, Michelle, right? But I think that Obama, this is just a Greg thing, okay? I think Barack Obama is really fortunate to leave and have the existence today in 2023 with the positive legacy that he has. I think that's kind of good that he, I have a funny feeling that he would really, despite anything, any other reasons, but I think he'd have a real tough time jumping back into
Joe Biden
that
said he was clean,
pit.
You know? Said he was clean. What a racist remark.
Clean and articulate. The quote was clean and articulate. God, anyone else say that, they'd be in federal prison now, Father.
Right. But do you think that would, let's say it happened. Let's say he died or he just couldn't run and that was their strategy.
Yeah.
Don't you think that would change the
entire dynamic?
The whole
landscape?
The whole landscape, no?
Yeah, it's a game changer. You'd have to, as Republicans, I'll tell you what, you'd have to go back in the huddle. Okay, because you'd probably be beaten in a federal election. That's why. No, because you'd probably be beaten in a federal election, guys. The swing voters. You saw the power of the incredible power of Obama the first time around. And I'm just telling you, I'm interested to look back on that piece because there were so many reasons. I listed 18 of them. But I also said, I don't think the Democrats are smart enough, you know, to run a winning candidate.
Well, I'm wondering if their plush lifestyle would really allow them to give up all that luxury and really work hard again. I'm not trying to indict her character.
I don't think so, Father.
You know,
I don't think so, Father.
Trump really gave up that lifestyle to serve, I believe, even though there's a lot of flaws in his life. And I like Rich's example with Cyrus. But I really think that something like that, as they regroup, would really change the landscape of the whole election.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I'm going to ask a couple of questions about that. And I want everybody to weigh in. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Michelle Obama, and, you know, there's the whole conspiracy that she's the first trans first lady. You all heard that. You know, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one that's heard that. What's your thoughts? You think that would impact anything? Do you think that maybe why she's not seriously considering running has anything to do with that?
I think that would exalt her. That would be something in her corner in light of the landscape right now. If anything like that, I don't know that I believe it. If anything like that came out, I think that would rally a whole lot more people just to show that we're not biased and prejudiced. I think it would be a terrible thing. I don't believe that really is true, but I do think that it could throw a wrench in the whole strategy of the Republicans, and it could be an October surprise. It may not come out in October, and Greg said, we have to get back in the huddle.
I'm trying to think of that. I'm trying to think of that famous actress that made that. She's the one that really made the comment that really sent that into a tailspin. And what was her name? Was it Joan Rivers? And she died like 2 weeks later, you know, after she made that comment. You know, it was like, well, do you think we'll ever get, And she just came out and said, and it was like, you know, everybody's grabbed that and run with that. And, you know, and I've seen many, many memes and things out there. You know, the country is so divided, bitterly divided. See, I live in West Virginia. They're bitterly divided here about that, guys. And they believe that here. They do. They believe every bit of that. You know, and I think that most of the people I know in eastern Kentucky and northern Virginia and southern Ohio that I talk to believe that. And these are seated state delegates and state senators that share that same information. So I'm with you. I'd like to see how that would look. But I think it would really stir up the pot pretty good.
Boy, on the trans thing, I mean, James, you're bringing up important stuff here. I would like to, God bless Val. She missed the first hour. She was busy ministering to a number of churches down here in Arizona. And what on this issue, because we brought up the trans issue here. James, could you kind of clue Val in a little debrief on in the first hour where you had talked about that crazy story of the denying of the parental rights in the schools? Could you just, if you wouldn't mind, because I wanted to hear her weigh in on that. I'd love to hear her response on that. That's a big deal. That's a big deal.
Well, a federal judge in Maryland, there was a school that allowed parents to have their children opt out of LGBTQ curriculum in grade school. And we're talking sixth grade and below. And a federal judge came in and weighed in and said, no, the parents cannot opt their children out of that. And not only that, they came back and said, furthermore, the parents do not need to be informed that their children are getting, you know, having access to this, these books or whatever it was, that was specifically, you know, an effort to teach them about the LGBTQ lifestyle. And that's a very real thing. I mean, I can send you the link to that. And it has got, you know, when was the last time that you've seen a Muslim imam, a rabbi, and a Christian priest standing together? I haven't seen that. You know what I mean? But these three faiths are coming together and saying, you know, hey, whoa, hold on a second there. Let's put the brakes on that. So I'm interested to get your side of that and hear what you have to say.
Well, I have witnessed that. So back to Alberta, the 3,000 plus signatures that we rallied came from all walks of life. We were people group A through Z. We were 30 faith communities strong. So you're right. This is a concern. This is a top concern. And my advice is pay attention to why they want to indoctrinate your children. That's what I did. I scaled it back and I said, okay, hold on. We're not just dealing with a perverted agenda or there's more to it. Why is it so essential that they teach the kids this virtue signaling? And it makes no, it's exactly what we're talking about now with the trans agenda.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of signaling. So if they learn this and they teach it at a young age, it becomes our new culture. And so tonight I was part of many churches praying together, addressing these issues that are impacting the community. And this is what we have to do, is we have to put parental rights a top issue. Parental rights is a national security concern. Because if we do not have the ability to protect our children, that means it's in the hands of whatever changing government and whatever their agenda is. And if you've got perverts who want to expose children to adult content for their own gratification, it's secret.
Yeah.
Exactly. So this is very, very serious. And what we found is we, in Canada, this was happening early 2015, 2016, they were locking gymnasiums and showing porn over the lunch hour. So it's going to take brave, bold parents and patriots who aren't afraid to go into the school and go into these seminars, go into these sessions, okay? It's real. And tonight, we're praying for the teachers. We're praying for the janitors. We need people who are going to stand up, rise up, man up, and protect our children. And we can't delay this. If you're looking for an October surprise, let's make it a comeback of the family unit and bold people standing up, telling the truth of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We had a show on the steps towards fascism. And we didn't bring this topic up. I thought about it later, but one of them is indoctrination of the youth. Okay, none of the other, you know, when I talked about, I read through all these articles, most of them were left-leaning. They never brought up indoctrination of youth because right now, you know, again, and James and I had a really good honest discussion because we admitted where it was both the right and left to it. And I will tell you, Christians have been indoctrinating youth for a long time. They're the book burners and stuff like that. But right now, it's the LGBTQ community that is into the indoctrination of the youth. Okay? It's the left that's doing it. So this is a major step. Now, the solution to this, you want to break the teachers' union? School choice.
Absolutely.
We need to have school choice. Let the money that the federal government gives go to wherever the parents want to put their school. So, see, the teacher union dominates because we force our kids to go to the public schools.
Arizona's doing it,
Rich. If you give them the choice to send them someplace else, the public schools will go bankrupt and the teachers' union will be broken. And if they want the students back, they will then teach what the parents want them to teach.
And give a quality education. It's inferior. They don't give the product for the price that they're charging. And a lot of private schools and Christian schools have proven that. With so much of a lower budget, they've put a better product out.
Absolutely. Arizona's doing it. We got the example, and I know there's other states. Rich, you talk about it. I put it as a chapter in my book. Any federal monies, block grant, or whatever, go straight to the state. Votes actually follow the patient for health care and follow the student for education. Val Olson has two kids in the Arizona voucher program right now. And I mean, if she wants to share that, but I love just boots on the ground, what's going on, because that's the way to run education, whether it's any states around the country or Alberta under their new state constitution, run it like a quote voucher system and they dump all of these crazy unions and school districts. And, you know, let's cut the fat off there. Go directly from the state, run by the state, but directly to the parents and the teachers in the classroom. Val, touch on that. Your daughters, I believe, are in charter schools, are they not?
So what you're talking about is really a solution that President Trump, when he was here in Arizona last year, he said, this is a semi-quote, watch Arizona and what they roll out for education. They are going to lead across our nation. That's what he said. And this is exactly what Greg is talking about, is a set amount of money is allocated where the parents decide. So it can change year to year because your child is your responsibility. You know them best. You know their needs best. And this is also empowering the family because many are choosing homeschool. So for a mom who stays home and raises the children and chooses to teach them, she now has funding where her children can access the way that they learn best. You know, it looks different for every family. And that's part of the beauty of the United States, having the right to choose. So whether it's a charter school or a public school or a religious school or a tech school, I mean, the possibility is endless. But Greg said it best when he said, you know, it's all about competition. So this is where we're going to get rid of the loser teachers, the bottom feeders who have a real sick political agenda. They're out, right? And it makes way for the best of the best. And that's going to strengthen our entire nation. So I love it. I think it's fantastic. It's working. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a solution. So I really hope that we are going to see it spread like wildfire across the nation.
And also
the failed schools. The failed schools where people are caught. I grew up in the projects in Newark, New Jersey. They used to bust some kids from an even worse part of Newark that I lived in. And the parents are trapped in those failed schools. And it's not right. They should have choice. You know, they're all about choice when it comes to abortion. My body, my choice. We need to have school choice. Absolutely, as Rich and Val both have said and Greg.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree with that. I think the issue has really come down to, you know, this is the fight against, you know, left and right, and it's nailed down to that. And you said that beautifully. They agree with choice for everything except for schools. And like Val said about the bottom feeders, that's true, and that's why they fight so hard against this, because they know that the bottom feeders represent about 75% of what they've got out there, especially the ones that are leading some of these more radical teachers' unions. They're terrible teachers. That's the reason why they make them into radical union leaders, you know, and that's what they become. I'm not saying all unions are bad, but I'm saying that as far as the teachers' unions go, that there are some really bad players in there that should be focused more on teaching and less focused on spreading Marxist ideologies.
You know, James,
okay.
I'm sorry, Rich. We just to finish off real quick, What we're talking about is these policies to cut out a teachers union, this nonsense and stuff. It actually translates to boots on the ground success. And just a fast example, there's I research this down here in Arizona because of this issue. Education is huge in my mind and on my heart. And the school down here I researched, I spoke with them, I visited with them, got a tour of their school, Legacy, down here. They never closed during the lockdowns, guys. They ran this school, and it was a K-12, and a good amount of kids. I don't know, 600, 500, 400, I'm not sure. But they never shut down. They had protocol. They had mandates. They didn't even stop their PE class or anything. And they had, for the entire year, guys, they had one documented case, and that was secured with protocol, no deaths, and that was it. And they didn't. And you talk about watching a school that's operating without a school board thumb on them as far as political correctness and wokeness. It was a pleasure. And they're receiving, these schools are receiving, I think it's $7,200 a year per student just to for all of these private schools down here in Arizona. And so all the schools, it's competition, so they work within the budget. Hello? But the only people that lose are the $200,000, $300,000 salary people in the school boards, guys. So there you go. There's a solution. There's a solution.
Well, I think, and Pachella can definitely speak on this because his wife taught at a private school. The private schools produce results. The public schools have been failing. Our test scores are declining every year, okay? So the problem is, the teachers union does not want competition. They want to reinforce failure because they know if we get school choice, the money follows where the schools where the parents put their kids into, the public schools will almost go out of business.
My wife did not join the teachers union. We got married in 1976, and she took a lot of heat for it, but her identity was in our family, in our church family, and she could see back then how corrupt it was and how they thought they knew better than the parents. Real hubris and arrogant. The competition that Val spoke about, we have to reinsert into education because they are not producing what they claim they're producing because they're indoctrinating and not educating. And I know a little bit about education. I've been teaching on the undergraduate and graduate level for over 20 years. And I just think that they're afraid of competition because they're not producing. They're afraid of the competition because they know they'll lose. My wife's school, they had students get in Stanford. My daughter got out of 10 schools. I think she got into 8, maybe 9, one on a waiting list, and so on and so forth, because they're, concentrating. Rich taught there, on the basics and linguistics and history and, Greek studies and things of that nature. So bring on the competition. If you have the better ideas and the better outcome, great. Everybody will run to your school. But if you don't, they won't, and you lose.
Yeah. I like that. I like that thought. We're down to the last 5 minutes and 22 seconds. I'd like to do like I always do. I'd like to go around the room. Since I am a gentleman, we're going to say ladies first. So, Ms. Val, give us a few parting comments.
I've enjoyed our discussion tonight, and I'm just making note that, listening to what you were saying about your wife and how she stood up in the 70s, that's the kind of bold courage we need, and we need to listen to those who went ahead of us as parents. We need to hear that this has been going on for a long time, and here's the notes that you need as a parent now. And it's so important that we have these discussions. And we need the advice. We need the training. and we need to keep our eyes open so that we can do the best we can for our families and our community.
Okay. Rich, how about you?
Hey, have a good night, folks.
Oh,
was
all
that
right.
One line from Ritz? Was that one line from Ritz?
One line from
Ritz. Look, tomorrow I'm going to do a World War II reenactment, okay? And the unit I'm participating in decided to do American guerrillas in the Philippines, so none of us have to shave. And I'm wearing I let my goatee grow out because Wendell Ferti, who was the leader in the Mindanao, had a goatee. So, hey, I'm thinking about tomorrow, guys.
All right. Well, good luck, and don't get hurt tomorrow. To you, Brother Greg. Greg Meekin, tell us any parting good comments. Give us the good word, brother.
Oh, I'll tell you what, where do we start? I'll try and keep it brief, but I'm just so blessed to feel connected with you guys. You know, I joked with an old author friend of mine, Ann Rule, a crime author. You know, I'd worked with her and collaborated on a book with her, and I'd said to her, she's one of those people who said, you know, I feel like I've known you for like 200-300 years, you know, and that's the way I am with you guys. And just who you are, who you represent, and as you know, who we are. Not only me, not only Val Olson, but just all the people down here in Arizona, but all the people who are just loving freedom, loving God, loving family, want to get back to normality, what we were raised with, and we can do it. I believe it starts with the younger generation, and I'm really closely analyzing the alpha generation right now. That's 50 kids 15 years and under. Mm-hmm. And because I believe they're the future, I believe there's a lot of conservatives too. By the way, it's fun. The alphas and Gen Z have been fun to analyze. But I just say, hey, thank you. My name is Greg Meekin. The best way to find my work is on my website. Very proud of my website. It's a no nonsense. I don't have advertiser sponsors, etc. It's gregmeekin.com. That's GREGMEAKIN.com. It has a lot of my writings on there. I've been doing a lot of political predicting, and my first one was the top 10 reasons Donald Trump will be president. I wrote that in July of 2015. I got so much flack from my liberal buddies back east that I wrote a piece 2 weeks later saying, okay, five more reasons why Donald Trump will still be president. And there were 17 guys in the race. Hillary Clinton was anointed. So I've gone that a little bit contrarian in my life, as we've talked about on the phone. James, we're contrarian people, yeah. Right? We're contrarian. So check out my YouTube channel. I'm really proud of my YouTube channel. I just started it pretty recently. There's over 700 videos and radio clips on there right now. Over 16,000 views. That's at Greg Meekin. A lot of stuff, including a lot of this stuff. There'll be clips from today. I'm producing an archive of really good, smart people, good radio, good media in a time where media is garbage. Yep. So here we go, guys, to bigger and better things. And here we go to November 2024. I can't thank you enough, all of you, James, Rich, Father Mike, and, of course, my buddy Val Olson. I can't thank you enough for this experience.
All right. Father Michael, would you like to close us out in prayer? We got about 40 seconds.
The blessing of God Almighty, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. 30 seconds left, Father Michael. I'm going to let you close out the show.
Well, it was a wonderful experience to talk with everyone in such a calm and intelligent way. And I think we really came to some solutions, which you don't hear very much in debate. And I've taught debate and critical thinking, and it was a real show that we could be proud of because we really analyzed things and came out with solutions, and also that October surprise, kind of reflection is going to give us a little pause and something to think about even more.
Awesome. Hey, so we continue recording. So our actual show continues to record even though we go off of the air. So I want to say, you know, it's always a pleasure to have you all on this show. It really is. And I think we're making a difference. And I like what you said, Father Michael. We had a civil conversation, which doesn't always happen in America. Now, we are all fairly like-minded. You know, I believe that. I do want to get back to another discussion about the Alberta 51st movement. And then, obviously, Greg, you and I have been talking about the Around the Country tour. I absolutely plan and will. I've got to let it get a little cooler. You know, I know it's probably 100 degrees down there right now, right?
Oh, don't be a baby, James. Come on, man. You've been in Iraq. Come on, man. You can come to Arizona. Come on, man. No, this is going to be great, though. We are, let's say it officially here, James, on or off the record, whatever. I'm sure the CIA is listening in on and anything you guys do, but whatever. I'm saying no. In such a wonderful short period of time, you and I, of course, connected, but we don't just connect. And I love that, Father, you're talking about solutions and results. Mm-hmm. That's all I care about. I don't want to hear about problems. But here we are. We're going to do a full-blown media tour, James, from the East Coast. And I'm actually seeing if you would launch that from Oxford, Mississippi. I'll tell you what. Anyhow, but out to Arizona or bust, you'll come on
I
out.
I could do that.
I'm going to introduce you to... a big old 6 foot dude, 6 foot four, 230, big old cowboy hat, soon to be Senate dude. He wanted to get in a hockey fight with me it's on video, right? A hockey fight. Imagine. we're going to visit. We're going to do a digging for history, Arizona.
Yes.
We're going to go down to the border.
Yes.
We're going to go down to the border and, you're going to report back to your boys. And then we're going to do a connection with Alberta. We're going to hook up with them and everything's going to be great there. I cannot thank you enough, James, for your complete support for AB 51. You guys are rock stars, okay? Even though we're old guys, you know, we're still allowed to be rock stars, okay?
Well, look, hey, Val's not an old guy. She's not an old guy. She's younger than all of us.
I'm the oldest, though. I'm the oldest.
Val, 42 years
you
old,
guys
dude.
Have wisdom.
Yeah,
you're a breath of fresh air, Val. You're 42 years old, and we honestly do need a breath of fresh air. But what I love, and what I love about working with all of these, is it's multi generations. That's important to me. Yeah. I'm a boomer. Val's a Gen X. You know, there's Gen Z, millennials, but you all three of us. You're a Gen X, James.
I was
youngster.
Born in '68. Born in
You're a youngster, man. You're a youngster, but that's Rich and me and Father Michael, you know. We ain't getting any younger, man. Here you go. Here you go.
Well,
quick update? Can I just give you guys a quick update on Alberta 51? Because I think this is really important just to bring you guys up to speed. In Alberta, they have already started with lockdowns, and sadly, it is impacting our senior community that are in elderly care. And so I think it's really important to, you know, just mention that and say that it's important to pay attention to what's going on in Alberta because it really does happen there first and then it comes here. So just shine that spotlight and keep that in mind as we go forward.
So what are they locking down the senior citizen homes again?
They're starting there. So it has been confirmed that they're in lockdown mode right now. So I've addressed on the last show some concerns I had with, the intimidation tactics at the seniors. But now to physically have them in COVID lockdown restrictions it's devastating and it's unnecessary. It's not running on numbers or statistics, which tells me it's a bully campaign. And, you know, they need our help. I take that seriously when it comes to our elderly and our youth. So I want to do everything possible to, you know, let those guys know that we're not going to sit back and take it. We're actively pursuing grassroots initiatives to let people in on what's going on and do something about it.
Yeah. You know, I've got a friend that has a talk radio. It's early morning. His name's Tom Roten. And I sent him that information. So he really watches that, you know, because – we are worried about, you know, okay, so a story just broke in West Virginia. A famous radio host that we've all heard, and she was like in her 40s, she died of COVID-related complications. That's all they said, you know. We don't know if, you know, you really don't know, you know what I mean? But you don't want to disrespect the dead or the family and say, well, are you sure? So they just accept it. And I'm starting to see the masks. I'm starting to hear the discussions of kids, not, you know, schools getting locked down. But here's the thing about our family during the COVID lockdown. We homeschooled our kids. We didn't use the online portion. We opted to homeschool our kids. Our kids, which I've got a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old right now, went back to school, you know, public school, and they're in honors classes. I'm just going to just tell you, I mean, everything for them improved out of that experience. And it wasn't because I'm a great teacher or I'm really smart. Their mother really, really hammered on the STEM, on the science, on the math, on the technology, much harder than what they would have ever got in a traditional school setting. So I'm with you on that. And I think that, you know, if they want to lock down the schools, that's fine. Our kids will go. We will teach them again, and they will go back when they finally open up the doors again, and they'll be smarter. Now, what I think will happen is they'll start with the senior homes, just like you said. It's all we got to protect the senior citizens, and then we got to protect the kids. And then they're going to come up with some other kind of vaccine, and it's some other sort of, pandemic. And look, I'm not trying to sound nutty here, but I spent a lot of time in the Army, and I, you know, went through nuclear, biological, chemical training, and I can tell you this sounds like biological agents, you know what I mean, that they're, you know, letting out to see how it affects the entire world. And I think that the whole Wuhan, China incident, I believe that was a biological weapon that went amok, or maybe they did it on purpose. I don't know. So,
well, I think we have the ability though to know in advance, like with this, it's becoming a plan, in advance. These things are happening, and that's where I think investigative journalists, we really need to do our job and dig and demand more information. Is this an agent of war, so to speak, a biological agent of war, or what are we dealing with here? What kind of biohazard? If it is a strain, we need to know how they're properly preparing for it. So I think being notified or having these tips and seeing this happen, we should be tracking this very, very closely and taking it serious and asking better questions, because at the end of the day, we're losing freedom every time these decisions are made on a whim or in advance. And I've got a big problem with that one when there's no data behind it, no statistics, no anything. Some guys deciding in a health authority, yeah, we're going to lock these down and we're going to euthanize them. That's on the table when these things happen. When you don't have family involved or your POA, you could be euthanized. And that's just the way it goes in Canada. So
The veterans especially, it's heartbreaking after the sacrifices they made for their country. I heard one veteran confront Trudeau. He had lost a limb, and I guess they were cutting off some of his medical care or whatever. And St. John Paul II, who was Pope John Paul II, called it the culture of death. If you want to read a good document, he wrote in the 90s. It's called The Gospel of Life. You could read it online. Talks about euthanasia, abortion, just a slippery slope. It's a wonderful, biblically based document. I had, three students in 6 years, two women and one man, because of the readings and my lectures, they changed their position about abortion. I think the main reason was his document is so persuasive. And he's a brilliant man, but it's called The Gospel of Life by John Paul II. And it really gives us the necessary ammunition to make these appeals to people's consciences.
Yeah.
I'm going to read it. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
I've taught it a number of times. It's a good document.
It's about 11 minutes after 12 our time, and the old captain here, my eyeballs are getting heavy. I've been running nonstop.
How do you do
right,
it,
Greg?
How do you do it, James? That's after midnight, man. I haven't seen after midnight since my old drinking days in Quebec. You know what I mean?
Let me tell you about the incident today, okay? So I'm going to, and we're all among friends here. You know, I've got my grandkids that live with me now. I've got three of them that are here. And one of them is, he's autistic, and he got outside of the house. Now, I have a torn meniscus it's a hairline fracture, but I got a torn ligament in my right ankle. So, I mean, I'm really hobbled up. Okay. I'm just going to tell you all that it's tough. And he got out of the house and he ran, and I mean, is a fast runner. So my German Shepherd, I say, go get the baby, and he runs out in front of him, and we're going. And before we could get across, to the neighbor's house, he had already climbed the fence and jumped into their swimming pool. Now he's 3 years old.
Oh,
okay.
My.
The old hobbled man gets to the fence. I don't know how, other than I said, God, give me the strength. And I leaped that fence because it was locked. He had climbed over. So the fence was locked and the neighbor was out there. And God gave me the strength to leap over that fence. And I went straight in that swimming pool. And God, I'm telling you, God was there with that little boy, because when he jumped in, they had a floating mat, and he landed on that floating mat that covered the pool and did not sink. He was in the water maybe 20 seconds or 30 seconds, but it seemed like a lifetime for me. And God allowed me to get him out of there. God allowed me to climb back over the fence, walk back to the house. And then it was like, I realized the pain just bam. And then on top of that, I drove to Alexandria, Virginia. Then I drove to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And then I drove back to West Virginia all in the last two or three days. And I'm just telling you, it's just been a heck of a whirlwind week. But I have seen the power of God's love and commitment, and gave me, I didn't think that I had it in me, but evidently, I still do. And it's painful, but praise God. To God go the glory for all things.
Well, James, I pray for you, but I'd like to just pray that God would give you good rest and restoration from that traumatic situation and all that you've been doing, because we all know how hard you work, and we all get concerned sometimes because you're doing so much. And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. It never got recorded. We probably need to get back to that. But if I could just say a brief prayer for you, so God will really restore all that was lost from all that you expended.
Yes, please.
Heavenly Father, I just thank you for James. I thank you for all that he does. I thank you for the inspiration he is to all of us. I thank you for this miraculous incident with his grandson, granddaughter. I just pray, Lord, you'll replenish him, that you'll touch his body, that you'll raise him up. Your word says, if the same spirit that raised Christ from the dead dwells in you, he shall quicken your mortal body. I pray in Jesus' name that you would quicken James's mortal body. For I pray in Jesus' name, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen.
All right. Amen. And you all are all in my prayers, folks.
Appreciate it.
But it's time to go to bed. It's time to go to bed, everybody.
Get some sleep, guys. Dude, get some sleep. It's only 9:15 my time, and I'm going to be ready to go Betty by myself, right?
Well, it's great to be with you all.
God bless you guys.
Take care.
Good night. Good night, everybody. Take care, Val.